All right, we on? Thank you guys for joining us today. My name is Mary Lee Mackey. I'm joined by Dana Zimberkoff. And our session today is about taking control of dark data. So we're going to run through five quick steps to ensure a bright future for your enterprise. Before we get started, I'm kind of going to give you the format for today. So Dana and I are going to talk for about 30, 40 minutes or so. And we're actually very thrilled to have kind of a panel discussion for the second half of the session. So instead of just hearing from us, you get to actually hear from people that might be going through some of the similar challenges that y'all are going through today in your enterprise as well. So we'll bring them up about halfway through and start a facilitated discussion and then open up to the audience as well. Let's see. Might give it one more second to get started. I'm glad that everybody has they have the mood lighting on for us. Very pleased about that. All right, and any other questions we'll be addressing at the end of this session? I know there are microphones around here for y'all to get to as well. And also, just as a side note, be sure and stick around at the end of the session. We have extra, for those of you who don't know, AvePoint's giving away a Ducati once again this year. So for attending our partner session, you lucky bunch get to increase your odds of winning by coming up and grabbing an extra raffle ticket. So be sure and grab that and take it back to the booth later for you as well. Very cool. All right, so to get started, once again, my name is Mary Lee Mackey. We're talking about taking control of dark data, five steps to ensuring a bright future for your enterprise. So for those of you that aren't familiar with AvePoint, we have been around since 2001. We started off as a smaller little SharePoint backup software vendor. We've since expanded to a whole range of solutions that cover governance, compliance, content classification. Still have our core infrastructure management solutions as well, which is kind of our bread and butter. But we're definitely providing quite the range of solutions today beyond what that kind of initial infrastructure management solution was well over 10 years ago at this point. We do have an extensive partner network that we're very proud of. We work very closely with to ensure that we're able to deliver very comprehensive best-of-breed solutions to our end users and to the folks that we work with out in the field. And we're incredibly proud of our support team. So we were actually the first SharePoint ISV to offer full live 24/7 support, wholly owned support centers, all that stuff. All of our technical staff are MTTS certified. So we are very proud to have those skilled technicians in place for our customers or even for pre-sale support if you guys are interested in that. We do offer very select services to ultimately help you customize our products and make the most of any investments in AvePoint. And we definitely encourage you to not only stop by us and talk with us here at the conference downstairs, booth 2214, but we also have a community site, communities.avpoint.com. So we encourage you to visit that and stay engaged. We have our product managers monitoring forums, so you're able to go in, ask questions, engage with us directly via that as well. So again, we welcome you to continue the conversation well after the conference ends. AvePoint's vision, so again, I mentioned that we started off in kind of the infrastructure management space. Ultimately, we've expanded our solutions to a range of governance and compliance solutions as well. And essentially, what we've realized is our kind of core capabilities, the ability to back up data, restore it, know everything about it, replicate that content, manage permissions, set archiving policies. We found that a lot of our customers over the ages or over the years were aligning different controls with different tiers of service that they were delivering back to their business. So we've kind of automated that a little bit more with our governance line of products. Ultimately, we also know that you can't really set policies if you don't know what you have. So enter our compliance solutions and some of those things that we've expanded to over recent years. And the final kind of pillar, if you will, of AvePoint's vision and what we're really looking to deliver is that end user productivity solution. So making sure that ultimately, if your end users aren't able to work from wherever they are on whatever device they're on, ultimately your investments and your solutions are going to be for naught anyways. So with that, I'm going to let my co-presenter, Dana, introduce herself very quickly.
Great. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. I am Dana Zimberkoff. I'm our Senior Vice President of Global Risk Management and Compliance. Sounds like kind of a scary title. I'll add that, unlike probably most of you in the audience, I am not an IT person. I am a lawyer. I am not your lawyer. So as we're talking about compliance, hopefully you guys are all working with your general counsels in your companies around this topic. Give you a little bit of background on myself. I am from New Hampshire, originally from New York, but you can see here that I came to you in Las Vegas from snowy-covered New Hampshire, and very nice to be here. I joined President Clinton in appreciating the opportunity to be in Las Vegas during this very cold weather. And I'm responsible for AppPoint's product line that you hopefully are familiar with now called Compliance Guardian. It's our product that goes across information systems. So certainly SharePoint is an area that AppPoint has a lot of great strengths in. But as Mary Lee said, we know that customers have data everywhere. So whether that data is in your file shares or in your web systems and applications, whether it's data that you're managing through products like Link or Exchange or other non-Microsoft technologies, Compliance Guardian is a platform agnostic system that allows you to take policies that your organization is looking to achieve and then actually enforce them and monitor your progress with them as well. We'll get into that conversation a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Mary Lee Mackey. I'm for AppPoint. I'm the Vice President of Product Marketing, so I've been with AppPoint going on 6 years now this summer. So originally, I'm actually from a town called Oxford, Mississippi, which we'll kind of come back to in a second, but Oxford actually was named after Oxford, England, in hopes of attracting the university to come there. So I'm originally from Mississippi. After that, I went to engineering school, actually, in Manhattan at Cooper Union there, so I was able to hang out in New York for about 9 years, and actually recently, I've come full circle with my red phone booths that I grew up with on my town square in Oxford, Mississippi, and my double-decker bus. And now I'm back in the land of red phone booths. I'm actually based out of London currently. So back over there. Through my time with AppPoint, I've kind of written for us, both from a product perspective as well as different articles and blogs, things like that. And I also obviously speak on our behalf quite often. So the agenda for today, what we're going to kind of go through, first, so the topic is today about controlling your dark data. So first of all, we want to understand why we need to control. Secondly, we're going to get into a couple topics to help you understand where risk is coming from, where we've kind of worked with our customer base to understand the different types of things that are going on, things that you need to be aware of and plan around when actually looking to implement your own governance and compliance controls throughout your enterprise. Ultimately, we talked about giving you 5 steps, so we're going to give you those 5 steps. That's part 3. And then finally, we're going to bring 3 of our favorite customers up here to talk and kind of lead a panel discussion for us. So again, not just hearing from Dana and myself, but also kind of hearing through people that might have been through similar situations that hopefully can share their experience with you guys as well. So we're very excited to have them up here and going to be sure and to allow plenty of time for that. We have a couple moderated questions, and then we'll also open it up to the audience. So with that, we'll get started. So, first, the why we need to control. Ultimately, governance, compliance, all those things are about balancing risk in your organization, so making sure that you're reducing risk. But why is that important? Why is it important to reduce risk? Well, first of all, people's jobs are at stake, right? For any of you or that might be aware, Gartner predicted in 2016 that by 2016, 20% of CIOs would actually lose their jobs for failing to properly secure or have implemented information governance policies. So ultimately, besides a couple other things that are at stake, which we'll talk about in a second with Dana, information governance is important because ultimately it's somebody's job to make sure that information stays in the right hands and out of the wrong hands, if you will. A little bit more on governance. I'm sure some of you have seen this kind of concept before, but with regards to governance, typically what we see is that the amount of governance needed for content in your enterprise is proportionate to the audience that it's intended for. So typically something like your portal internet homepage would require a bit more strict and stringent governance controls than maybe your My Sites. Take AppPoint's internet, for example. Who is allowed to post things like news items that show up on our corporate internet portal homepage that is, you know, forced down everybody's throat when, as soon as they open up their Internet Explorer browsers? That's very tightly controlled by our corporate communications team, so not everybody can post that. That being said, we have our My Sites, which give people a bit more flexibility in what they're able to post up there and what they're able to, who they're able to share what with. So those are much more less restricted than something like our internet homepage. So now to talk about risk and compliance, I'm going to turn it over to Dana.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite quotes. This is actually from the captain of the Titanic, and it's really interesting to me because when I read this, I think about this in the context of IT, and even President Clinton's talk this morning, for those of you that were in the keynote, where he talked about sort of the good and bad of technology and what you can achieve. Technology can have the greatest controls, it can be the best of breed, it can be fantastic, but if you are not aware of risk in using it, then those controls can be problematic. We talk about security. In fact, I was at the RSA conference last week talking about security, and In fact, most security people will tell you that the only truly secure system is one that's turned off. And even some of those can be turned on. So, you know, we're really not talking in absolutes and black and white. We're talking about what kinds of controls do you need to put in place to both mitigate for risks you know today and those you haven't yet anticipated. So as we talk about the five steps we're going to recommend to you guys today, I want you to think about that. It's not always what you know that's going to be potentially, you know, the problem that you face tomorrow. So how do you address that? A part of that is by putting a programmatic approach in place for compliance. And when we talk about compliance for purposes of this discussion, really we're talking about the ability to conform to requirements. So this may be requirements around things like personal data or intellectual property or sensitive data within your environment, critical data. Depending on the industry that you're in, you may be regulated by government requirements, by legal requirements, contractual requirements with your customers or with your partners, or industry requirements. And then between those two gaps, the data you're protecting and the requirements you have, you may have a number of different policies that you put in place at the organizational level to comply with those requirements that are either external to your organization or internal. And you need to apply those policies to the regulatory requirements and then to your IT systems.
Absolutely. So now that we've kind of talked about the importance of these things, right? We know we need governance, we need compliance to ultimately reduce the risk of our enterprise content and the solutions that we're delivering back to our business. But ultimately, we've talked about risk and the things that we kind of know about. But ultimately, the next part of this conversation, we want to go into a little bit more depth on where risk is coming from currently and what we've seen, again, in the customers that we've been able to work with over the years and some of the things that have kind of been the things that kind of come up to bite you later on. So first, obviously, impacts this social, mobile, and global are a lot of those trends today that we see that are having this impact. So we'll go into a little bit more detail.
Now, we promise we actually wrote this presentation before the keynote today, but you know, you can't go into a presentation without hearing about big data. Big data means a lot of different things to different people, but from a compliance perspective, what it means to folks that are in the role of having to protect your customers' assets or your company's assets, it really is a concern around how much data you collect, right? From the perspective of your lines of business, often the business sees the opportunity to take as much as possible to be competitive, right? People that are running businesses want to take customer data, they want to collect information, they want to gather metrics, they want to get as much information as possible about their customers so that they can be competitive and have that competitive edge to be able to refine products, to be able to sell and support and serve your customers. That's not a bad thing necessarily, but from the perspective of your compliance folks, the concern that they very fairly may have is that once you take that data, once you have that data, you also have to be responsible for that data. You have to protect that data, right? So it's sort of a natural contradiction a little bit in terms of the interest necessarily of the business and the compliance folks, because you'll have your, you know, lawyers saying, do we really need this? Do we really have to take it? Because once we have it, we have to put perhaps a records management retention schedule around it, and we need to make sure that we're end-of-lifing this information properly and protecting it. So there are some competing concerns here.
Yeah, absolutely. And so not just with regards to actually keeping your data, but also trends in the way we work now. So what we've seen now is that the introduction of social technologies, whether it's native SharePoint social or Microsoft's acquisition of Yammer, for instance, social technology allows us to more immediately communicate and interact with each other, which is great. Ultimately, though, if we're kind of allowing for that immediate interaction, we're giving everyone a voice, we're allowing that access from anywhere. I don't know if any of you guys have seen some of the advertisements come up on your Channel 9 TVs in your hotel rooms, but ultimately a lot of the pitch on even Office 365 is allowing people to do their work from any office at any place, not having the restriction of having to be in a local office behind certain firewalls, but ultimately opening up and allowing people to access from anywhere. Again, it's allowing us to be more productive, but also still introducing risk. So while these things are potentially adding value to our organization and the solutions that we're delivering, it's also necessary for us to understand that these things result in more and more people being content contributors. The more people that you have contributing content, the more people that you have to worry about saying something inappropriate, accessing something you're not supposed to have access to, or anything like that. So these are things, again, that we just want to be sure and be aware of that are introduced that are introducing risk into our organization. So ultimately, what does this mean? What have we learned? The fact that we need controls, we need governance, we need compliance. Now we've started to understand a couple of the areas in which that are introducing risk into our organization. So ultimately, in order to, before we kind of go into our next five steps, ultimately what we're looking to do here is balance, right? Balance that transparency, collaboration, the things that allow us to really deliver valuable business solutions to our enterprise, but balance that with the controls that allow us to make sure that we're protecting our data and have good data management controls in place as well. So we're able to, again, conform to those requirements and things that Dana kind of spoke about earlier as well. Because there is a balance and because there's somewhere in the middle, that means that at some point we're going to have to have a trade-off. So Dana mentioned earlier the fact that, you know, a lot of times we hear in kind of a running joke in our with the compliance folks that we talk with is that the most secure system is one that's just turned off. Obviously, we know that's not an option. We need people to be able to work from wherever they are, on whatever devices they're on, wherever they may be located around the world. And those are things that are ultimately going to help our workers do more with less, you know, control their costs of our IT investments, all those great things. And ultimately, we have to trade that off with securing our sensitive information, or at least making sure that we are kind of allowing for that to be part of our process.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the consequences for non-compliance can be quite significant, right? The penalties can be monetary. You can have fines from the government. You can have financial orders against you through a court system. You could have legal exposure for any of you that are that live in the U.S. and have turned on the news in the last several weeks or a month or two. You've heard of a small company called Target, which has had a target on its back for a rather significant data breach. But, you know, what's interesting about that is that it truly could have happened to anybody, right? And it's very challenging, right? What the brand, the reputational damage to a company like Target, where customers or consumers feel that they're not confident in the ability to shop in those companies, where their credit cards may be compromised, is significant, let alone the class action suits that are being brought against Target for that breach. And not only the reputational damage, but one other thing that I think people don't always consider is that if you're found, if your company is found to have not acted in good faith, to have not had appropriate controls in place, or if you have a policy, a privacy policy or security policy that your company is not actually acting in accordance with, then you can also enter into a position with the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission in the United States, where you're going to have a consent decree with auditors in your company for 10 to 20 years. And trust me when I tell you that having auditors in your company for 20 years may far outweigh the cost of any financial penalty that you have to pay. So it's a balance, right? As Mary Lee has said all along, not only do we have to balance data transparency and collaboration with privacy and data security, we also have to manage this in the context of shrinking IT budgets, right? Being able to take advantage of technology that you already own so that you're maximizing your current investments, and also being able to improve your security posture and your threat posture. One part of almost every company's budget that is increasing is their cybersecurity budget, right? So we know that there's increasing attention on security, as there very well should be, right? So if you can, as a IT administrator, help introduce controls to your systems that will allow you to meet those security objectives, then you're one step ahead of the game. And so that's some of the advice that we'd like to leave with you guys today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, while you're here, we've got five steps that we're going to go through. Ultimately, so again, regaining control over your enterprise content, what we want to talk about. Before I do that, though, one of those, but wait, with the QVC commercials, I'm going to let Dana say a few words here.
Yeah, so I think the key, if we were to give you one piece of advice, we're going to give you five, right? But if we were going to give you one piece of advice, it would be what I would call kind of common sense, but surprisingly, very few companies actually have this working in real life. And that is probably what your parents told you is just part of being a good person. I would say that this is true for being a good corporate citizen as well. Say what you're going to do. State your policies as they actually are in real life. And many companies are already there. They have policies around how they manage sensitive data in their business. I go out and talk with customers all the time, and they say, well, we have a policy. We have a policy that says you're not allowed to put records inside of SharePoint, or you're not allowed to put highly sensitive data in this environment, or we have a policy that says our end users are supposed to classify data, right? But very few of them actually have enforceable policies, policies that they can ensure their end users are actually complying with. So they have these rules, but they don't have the controls in place to enforce people to make sure that their end users are actually doing what they say. So it's very important to not only say what you do, but then to do what you say. And then from a regulatory compliance perspective, from the perspective of your auditors, you have to be able to prove it, right? So say what you do, do what you say, and prove it. And then you are going to have a really strong foundation for a good compliance framework in the business. Moving on, how do you do that? The first step is know thy business. Understand what it is that you're trying to protect. One of the biggest mistakes we see people making across, really around the world and across industry, is that they apply sort of universal data protection policies to all of their content. And it's really important to understand what is it that you're trying to protect, right? If you don't know what kind of data is out there, it's very hard to put those kind of information controls in place. So you have a policy that says we don't allow highly confidential data inside of SharePoint. How do you know if it's there? If you haven't been monitoring, if you haven't been measuring, if you haven't been looking for that data, you don't know what you don't know. You have a policy that says all records need to be in this record management system, whether it's SharePoint or Documentum or anything else out there. How do you know that you don't have data on your file shares? How many people in the audience have file shares in their companies? 100%, right? There's almost no company out there that doesn't have data on their file shares. How many of you guys know what's on those file shares? One. Well, you're a good man.
Bold. All right. Bold statement, sir.
Good man.
We're going to quiz you on that later.
I guarantee you that most people have some kind of sensitive data on their file shares, and they don't even know it's there, right? Because file shares are great because you can dump. They become dumping grounds, right, for all kinds of content that may have this dark data on them.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And it's such a great opportunity to take a review of that data and then appropriately take measure of it. So as we move forward, what are some steps that you can take to understand that data? Well, first of all, you have to understand how data flows in your organization, right? Who's using the systems and in what way? If you don't understand what your business users do with your systems every day, then having a policy doesn't mean anything, right? The problem with policies is, quite frankly, they're made by lawyers who sometimes don't understand what they mean to the way that the business runs life on the ground. So a policy that says we don't allow this kind of data inside of SharePoint doesn't necessarily take into effect how people are using SharePoint in the business. So know thy business, understand how data flows in your organization, and typically when you find that people are doing things that are not in accordance with your policy, it's not because they're out there trying to do something shady. It's because they're just trying to do their jobs, right? And at the end of the day, people will do what's necessary to do their jobs. You need to know and assess trusted third parties, the vendors that you work with, other businesses that you work with. You need to find that data wherever it is, inside of SharePoint, your file shares, your other systems. And then you need to prioritize. Again, this idea of a one-size-fits-all security policy is going to be very challenging to implement. Do you need to apply the same level of security protection to companies, pictures of your company picnic as you do to your intellectual property or customer or credit card information or, you know, PCI data, right? Probably not. So if you can prioritize what is truly risk within your business, then you can appropriately apply data protection principles to that. And then you need to monitor and enforce. Often we hear, well, we did this audit and we found all these things and now we're done until next year. Well, guess what? Data changes all the time, right? People come and go. Compliance needs to be an ongoing process, and it's not something that you can do once a year.
Absolutely. And then going back to the prioritization and classification of content, ultimately, and kind of speaking a little bit as a third-party vendor here as well, in SharePoint, you have capabilities to help you intelligently tag and classify your data, whether it's management data service, whatever that may be. And ultimately, whatever tools and capabilities you're using within your organization, that metadata is going to allow you to have a little bit more control and allow you to have a little bit more flexibility in the types of policies that you're going to apply to different data sets. So ultimately, the more that we know and understand about our data and the better it's classified and tagged, for instance, the better potentially we're going to be able to be off later in the ability to filter for their specific sets of content to apply, again, specific policies that Dana was referencing to that content. Okay, so step number two. Think compliance for dummies. So now we're not calling anybody's end users in your organization a dummy by any means. But Dana kind of alluded to this earlier, making sure to set enforceable and easy to follow policies. So ultimately, we've gotten into situations, and I think, you know, early days of SharePoint adoption, people that locked it down too much saw poor adoption, got poor value and poor return out of the system. People that kind of like let it go wild west, they're potentially getting value to a certain extent, but then by letting it get so out of control, it kind of caused even more problems later. So one of the most common things that I kind of laugh about and talk about whenever we talk about whether or not we have to plan for accidental or malicious breaches. So I don't know how many of you kind of use your autocomplete stuff with Outlook. So email is part of my everyday working experience. I work in SharePoint, I work in email for the most part. Link is my instant communication. The amount of times that I have sent a link, for instance, to a SharePoint document to Heather in my organization, and Outlook's auto-completed it to a Heather that's actually not in my organization, that might have been some kind of information that actually that person probably didn't need to know. I know I've been on the receiving end of information that I know I wasn't supposed to receive because it might have been something that somebody with a partner of ours might have thought that they were sending it to somebody at a competitor of AvePoint's even. So the amount of times that we've accidentally filled in or let Outlook auto-complete or didn't kind of modify the document appropriately, shut it off in email, those things happen all the time. So again, we're not thinking about things that are kind of outside the scope of what you need to plan for. We're not planning for malicious users necessarily, but by making it easy for me to follow my policies, I'm reducing the risk of me kind of making those accidental mistakes. So if I'm a good corporate citizen and I'm storing all my documents in SharePoint, even if I email a Heather outside of my organization, she doesn't have access to that SharePoint link. Whereas if I've made it more difficult for my users to actually use SharePoint and they're sending attachments instead of email, which is, you know, the bane of everyone's existence or those Exchange administrators' existence, then somebody has access to that document if it's as an attachment. But if I've kind of made it easy for people to work in and around SharePoint, for instance, and I have a good corporate culture of sending around links to information instead, a lot of that common scenario is for accidentally sending that attachment versus a link that somebody doesn't have access to. Some of those things where I've even gotten access to content could have been avoided just by using a different way and kind of encouraging our users to work in a different way, in a different methodology. So that's what we mean by kind of setting things that are easy to follow, part of the system. A lot of times this comes into play when evaluating whether or not you're going to implement manual controls or automated controls, things like content classification. If somebody uploads a document to SharePoint and you require them to fill in 20 different metadata fields before that document is uploaded to SharePoint, chances are that document is not going to SharePoint or they're going to do a really bad job of filling out all that metadata information. So maybe there's a balance between having some pieces of content auto-classified in certain ways. Maybe it's a balance of kind of doing the bare minimum initially and then kind of trusting your users to do the right thing but having controls in place to verify that as well later.
Yeah, I think Mary Lee hit on a really important point, which is that you need to make it easier for your end users to do the right thing than the wrong thing. It was kind of funny, I was at a security conference recently, and a number of CISOs were on a panel that I was moderating, and one of them said that every time they close an internal hole in their systems where they find that their business users have been doing something that they don't want them to do, every time they close that hole, then they see all of a sudden their network traffic goes up to box. Right, because people are now just putting data on their own personal SkyDrives outside of the system. So this is the thing. People find a way to do their jobs the right way or the wrong way. And I think what we can do in this room on the IT side is make it easier for them to use the systems that you already own and that you want them to use, where you can put appropriate controls in place and encourage that kind of behavior. Again, not because they are intending to do anything malicious. I think if somebody really wants to hack your systems, you can put a lot of controls in place. Ultimately, they'll probably find a way to do it. But if you look at surveys, Surveys find that by far most data breaches, most issues result from end users making mistakes, right? From your business users simply doing something that they didn't know was out of the policy, saving something in the wrong place, as Mary Lee said, using autocomplete and sending something to the wrong person. So if you make it easier for them to behave in the right way than in the wrong way, then I think you're going to be much further down the path you need to be in. And remember that people change, right? I would love to tell you that all this can be done through software, but a lot of it is education, right? It's people, process, and technology, and making sure that compliance is something that's a part of the culture of the business and something that you think about every day. In the same way that we don't send around documents with spelling mistakes because we have spell checking, right? And we've created a culture where it's not okay to send documents around with spelling mistakes. That's how you have to think about compliance in the business.
Absolutely. And part of the things that we also have to consider about, and we kind of talked about this historically as well, planning for data and people in motion. So realistically, we're not dealing with systems now and solutions now where everything's in our internal firewalls, for instance. Even at AvePoint, we collaborate quite frequently with our partners and customers that are outside of our own firewalls. So making sure that we're planning to also collaborate externally is going to be very important for us as well. And again, going back to that value prop of Office 365 that I know I've been getting on repeat on my SVC hotel room commercials, ultimately, things like Office 365 are allowing us to work from anywhere, from multiple devices. So if we're not accounting for this in our policies as well, then ultimately we're going to be out of date before we even get started. You know, historically, that might have been something where we could have worked around, but again, like Dana said, if you're blocking that off, if you don't allow people and give them a secure way to collaborate even externally, everything's going in Dropbox, and then you have no idea what's there and what's around that. So ultimately, allowing for that and realizing that this is not, again, a black and white scenario, but this is ultimately about us working with our end users to develop the solutions that are going to be most effective for us to get our jobs done. So the next step, not really a step, more of kind of a process, because this is really what we're talking about today. It's what Dana alluded to earlier. Wash, rinse, repeat. Compliance, again, not a final thing one way or the other. We're dealing with a continual process. Ultimately, one of the kind of major pillars of any good governance plan, realistically, is to plan for continual improvement. Even if we look at regulations, the things that we're subject to today, laws evolve, laws change over time. Dana always likes to say that it's called practicing law for a reason because no one can ever get it right. So practicing laws, again, going back to the fact that laws change, our internal policies change. What if your company acquires another organization or merges with an organization that deals with a whole other data set? Now you're looking at rewriting and redoing your policies to account for that different type of information that you might now be responsible for. So ultimately, making sure that you're building into the system ways to continually improve your processes, accounting for and building in for change is going to make you more successful in the long run. So whatever you're doing to understand your data, implement those controls, help enforce your policies, all those things that we've talked about so far, ultimately doing that again and again and again is kind of our step four, if you will. So again, making sure that we're educating the fact that it is a overall process that we need to be aware of.
Great. And then as we said, the last step and the one that I think is most important, be able to prove that you are doing what you say, that you're saying what you do, doing what you say, and that you actually have those controls in place. I like to talk with compliance officers, general counsels, privacy officers, security officers, and talk about having them put an SLA in place with the business. I hear often when I'm talking with IT professionals that they see privacy as the place where IT goes to die and that security always leads with no, right? Hopefully there are no security or privacy officers in the room today, right? But that is a perception that often is the case because what happens is those folks tend to have very small teams and they're not a part of the discussions. There's this methodology that Microsoft helped to publish that's called Privacy by Design and Security by Design. I mean, any of you guys familiar with that? Right. The idea is that you're better off building controls into your systems. And so if you talk to privacy officers and security officers and your IRM folks at the beginning of a project, instead of when you're about to go live, which is often the case, because that's what I hear from privacy and security officers, is that we get the call at AvePoint because somebody has contacted them from IT and said, I am about to migrate to SharePoint 2013, and security said we can't go live unless we put controls in place, and we need to do this like in 2 weeks, right? And I'm thinking to myself, well, why are they contacting you 2 weeks before they're about to go live with the system? Did security not exist when they started planning the system? No, it's just because there is this tension sometimes between compliance and the business, where I believe if there can be an SLA in place where you guys, as the on the IT side of the house, or whether it's your line of business or the IT folks, go to compliance in the beginning instead of at the end of the process to say, look, this is what we are planning on doing. We're launching a new system. This is what we're going to be doing. What kinds of controls are we going to need to put in place so that we can get your sign off every step through the process instead of at the end when we're about to go live? And I think by doing that, you will save yourselves not only time and money, but you will help build a better end product for your users.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to proving it, and kind of this goes to, you know, you have your manual processes, your automated processes. If you're implementing technology in your enterprise and you have controls in place that say so-and-so should or should not have access to this content, where do you go to get the report that proves that so-and-so does or does not have access to that content? Where do you go to prove that that content was classified appropriately by an automated system? Or where do you show that that was classified by a person in your organization? So ultimately, making sure that the technology that you're implementing has the capability to show you and report on what it is that's actually happened one way or the other goes back to that prove it and being able to, again, for those regulated for the people in our organization that are going to come knocking and asking for those reports later. If we think about that up front and the fact that we know we're going to have to prove it later, accounting for that as part of our continual process is going to be also really necessary and important for us to kind of realize up front. Now, I know we said we had 5 tips, but we have a bonus tip, and Dana kind of alluded to this a little bit as well, talking about perception. And perception is not just the job of a CMO of an organization to manage. So Dana already talked about the internal perception of how your IT security, your security and compliance teams might be perceived by the people that just want to get their jobs done, right? If these are the people that are kind of continuously saying no, and their lives are constantly made difficult, and your business users see these people as the people that kind of get in the job of me being able to just do it, why can't I just send this document to my partner via Dropbox? It means they can get the contract signed, we can get it back, I can close my deal, whatever it may be. But ultimately, going back to the fact that if you're getting in these conversations early enough, aligning your business and IT staff, you're going to be able to control the perception that security are like the bad guys. And then we also kind of talked about this earlier. Dana used Target as an example. But there's an internal perception of your security team, but there's also the external perception in your brand management, realistically, that you have to be aware of as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll just share with you guys is when I was at that security conference that I mentioned, there were about 800 CISOs there, and I did challenge them. My challenge for them for 2014 was, you have to answer every question with yes. You cannot use no. So when somebody comes to you and says, can I do this, you must answer yes, and then you can tell them what needs to happen in order for that to be a yes, right? Because I think that is a reality sometimes, is that these compliance folks are in a position where they're overwhelmed, they have so much going on, and it's easy to lead with no as a default, right? Only one guy that I was talking to said, well, I love leading with no, and that's the way I whip my end users into shape. But I think generally, you know, that's the best practice, is they're there just like you guys as a service to the business, right? They're there, everybody has the same interest at heart, so.
Yeah, absolutely, and this comes back to the original conversations around SharePoint. We saw kind of the kind of diverging roads of what SharePoint implementations looked like. The people that said no were the people that didn't have My Sites, didn't turn on social, didn't turn on anything. And we saw the organizations that said yes to everything. And there is a middle ground. There is a balancing act to that. And the people that said no to everything now, it's one of those things where you can barely get SharePoint off the ground because people just think it doesn't do anything and doesn't actually add value to what you're trying to do. So getting to yes is definitely very important for us. So now for the fun part. So let's discuss. So Dana's going to arrange our microphones over here and get us switched on, and then I'm going to bring up our panel that we are thrilled to be joined with today. So the folks that we're bringing up, Paul Bukis from SunTrust Bank, Jared Matfis from UTC, United Technologies, Stephen Perry from MetLife. So we have a couple questions that I'm going to ask first to kind of have a facilitated conversation, and again, to talk about some of the things that we've alluded to today, some of the controls that we've had to have in place. I would definitely encourage you to kind of come around the microphones if you want to take this time to kind of shuffle around. But before we do that, I'm going to turn it over to our panel, let them tell you a few things about themselves, a few things about their projects they're working on, so we can kind of get a lay of the land and before we get started in the questions. So with that, turn it over to Paul first.
Thank you. SunTrust Bank is based out of Atlanta, Georgia. We are the 13th largest bank based on total assets in the United States, with roughly $170 billion under management. I am the director of product engineering for the bank.
My name is Stephen Perry, and I work for MetLife, and I am the assistant vice president for internet and collaboration for all of MetLife globally. We are working on, or we have been working on for the last 3 years, rolling out SharePoint to 64 countries around the globe, as well, and we're currently working on our plans for migrating to SharePoint 2013.
I'm Jared Mathis from United Technologies Corporation. We're a conglomerate of a bunch of different companies, such as Otis Elevator, Sikorsky Helicopter. For us, you know, our biggest thorn in our side is U.S. export control, and you know, 2 years ago we got hit with a pretty nasty fine by the State Department, $75 million for violations under the ITAR. So we spent the past 18 months working on a remediation plan, forced data classification, you know, leveraging some of AvePoint's tools.
Very cool. All right, so now for the questions. So again, we're going to kind of get everybody warmed up, ask some of our own questions up front. And we can start however we want. But the first question is, what key regulations or information governance requirements were necessary for you to account for in your initial deployments? So this kind of goes back to understanding our business a little bit.
So for us at United Technologies, again, it's U.S. export control. And it's also Canadian export because we've got a business up in Canada as well. The struggle we have is, so on some of the contracts, such as some of our military engines, are actually allowed to be viewed by foreign persons in countries where they have a particular license with the, you know, with the State Department, such as we've got a military engine that's serviced in Belgium, right? So, but you know, the export stuff is kind of subjective, and we didn't always, you know, up until the point of the consent agreement, we did not have a really good handle on our data, you know, in terms of who had access to the data, you know, even what the actual data was, you know, was it classified as being, you know, something that falls under the ITAR, or is it just, you know, kind of general marketing information? We had a huge data cleanup exercise, you know, to get to where we are today.
There were several items that we needed to deal with, but the biggest one that we had to have in place in order to roll out the platform 3 years ago was SEC Regulation 17A4, which is a requirement that data that falls under that regulation must be archived to worm storage. That was a fairly large effort and problem for us to overcome, and we were able to do that with the help of the AvePoint product and one other vendor called Autonomy. Not the greatest vendor in the world, but they were able to help us with the offline storage of that content. Since going live, we now have full support for SOX on the platform for management, but the 17A4 was the toughest one. Because that would have, without that support, we would have had to have blocked 35,000 users from using the platform, and that we couldn't go live with almost half of our audience not being allowed to use the platform.
So we're a bank, and of course we've had some tough times here the last several years, 2008, 2010. We know we have the feds, we have FINRA, we have the SEC. We have all of those regulators that have focused on us here over the last 5 years. Now we have even more regulations that are controlling a lot of what we do and how we manage this content. So I think for us, you know, we, to Mary Lee's point before, it was 2007, SharePoint 2007 was the wild, wild west for us. And we're not going to take that approach with 2013. 2013 is live, but we are opening it up as a green field, and we're going to move slowly into it and adopt the various modules or features of that platform. And until the capability is there and can be properly governed, we're not going to open it up.
Okay, cool. Second question. So ultimately, you kind of mentioned a couple different regulations that you guys have to comply with. What data discovery processes are necessary for you to support your kind of information governance strategies? How do you go about that?
So again, it's all your ITAR is pretty much what, you know, it's what we live and breathe. There's a pretty robust e-discovery process for two things. There are two main kind of everyone's gonna about face is, you know, an employee doing something inappropriate, you know, either paying a bribe or, you know, HR related issues, right, where we gotta work with the lawyers to go ahead and figure out and, you know, what happened and also what documents are impacted by this particular event. So that's kind of our number one. Those are actually kind of fun because sometimes you get to see a video of something that maybe you shouldn't see at work. And then our second one too is, you know, Mary brought up a really good point. We ran into this issue too, is, you know, data getting sent to people unintended, right? You know, sending to the wrong, you know, Juan Jose, who actually is a technician down in Mexico, and he's not, you know, this the guy you sit next to every day that, you know, is a U.S. person. That's been our reality.
For us, obviously PII is a big concern for us, making sure that folks aren't putting personal identifying information, credit card numbers, social security numbers on the platform. And we have a process in place using eDiscovery that we can use to find that type of content. The eDiscovery system we chose to put in place was actually a combination of SharePoint 2013. We have a small farm to use the search engine within 2013 because it works better, and some customizations to do data collections for legal hold and storage of any content discovered until the lawyers or compliance can review it. So for us, some of the process is still manual, but for 2013, we're looking, before that platform rolls out, to fully automate the process as much as we can, so that the items or the content on the platform will be automatically surfaced and brought to the attention of whoever needs to see it.
Once again, you know, being in the banking industry, we've got so many different, SunTrust is not just a retail bank, it's an investment banking, it's got a mortgage organization, it's got capital markets, so trading and sales. And all of those different entities have different requirements. So over the years, we've had several different authoritative systems that house all of this information. So ultimately, the big vision is to try to reduce that footprint down to just a handful of systems or applications that house this data. Again, it's really difficult, whether it's an audit or in the case of a lawsuit, having to go out and do e-discovery to find all this information. If you're having to go out and search, you know, 20 different platforms to find it all, whether it's in SharePoint or it's in Link, Exchange, Bloomberg, you just go down the various messaging platforms, and we've got it all. So ultimately, it's to try to get it into a single repository.
Great. So this is one of my favorite questions, actually, and I know this is something that we kind of talked about before, and understanding where risk is coming from in our organization, what types of technologies we're putting into place. Talking to our customers, we've seen a lot of IT trends come and go. Some of the ones today that we're looking at are the decentralization of IT budgets. I talked to a different banking customer the other week, and one of their big concerns was the fact that they had a very centrally managed, well-controlled SharePoint environment. What they found over time is because they weren't necessarily maintaining a certain level of agility, certain business units were going and finding their own budget for their own IT systems. And then when it came time to implement controls, they were having the same difficulties that Paul just alluded to, kind of looking at having to manage different systems and ultimately not fully understanding what was there. So whether it's the decentralization of IT budgets, cloud computing, proliferation of mobile technologies, I would love to understand what has kind of impacted y'all's deployments the most, whether it's negatively or positively, and kind of some of the things that you might have done to overcome, whether it's challenges or take advantage of those bonuses that you're getting.
Yeah, so for us, you know, UTC grows through acquisition. 2 years ago, we purchased Goodrich. If you look in the commercial space, you know, Kidda, there's a bunch of different other businesses that we've acquired. And you're right, there's actually, for the most part, there's little to no controls at some of these organizations that we buy. So trying to, you know, go ahead and tell your senior vice president that we have no idea of what kind of data is out there is pretty painful, right? I've had to give that message. It really sucks. But, you know... But yeah, decentralization of IT is not fun. And the second one we get hit with too is how easy it is just to take advantage of cloud services. In fact, pretty much our biggest misuser of cloud services is actually our legal department. Because they found that it's a lot easier to get one of those cloud-based systems where they can go ahead and use their iPads and send documents to each other that don't have any of the controls, any of the retention policies. So, you know, the ease of the cloud and, you know, kind of that growing through acquisition, decentralization, those are two big challenges, at least for big companies like UTC.
Decentralized IT really hasn't impacted us much. We have a very centralized organization with the acquisition of certain companies that generally tends to change, but our senior leadership within IT very quickly bring that under control to keep IT centralized. So we've been fortunate that way. Cloud is starting, and we do have some solutions being hosted in Azure, not on the SharePoint front, but other solutions. From a SharePoint perspective, we did move to O365 for email and link about a year ago. So we've been getting a lot of pressure to use SharePoint Online. But the largest concern there, particularly with mobile, is data data leakage. How do you prevent somebody from, if you're going to make it available externally, how do you stop somebody from going to a kiosk, downloading a document, and forgetting to delete it when they're done? There are solutions that will deal with those concerns, but it's, you know, there's a lot of different types of solutions, and it's a lot of work to implement in an environment. So as we plan out and architect the 2013 environment, we're going to be trying to take a good portion of that into account, because we have a great deal of pressure from across the company for making the SharePoint platform available from the internet, which we currently don't support. So it's very locked down. As far as the box.nets and the OneDrives from inside the company, those were all locked out. You can't get to them at all. That doesn't stop people from emailing documents to themselves and then putting them up. But you know, there's only so much that we can stop. But once we provide this technology and the ability for folks to get to their content regardless of the device, then most of that should go away.
So for us, we had just a real quick interesting story. We identified 400 people that were actually using Dropbox within the bank, and not only were they using it, they also expensed it on their corporate credit cards. So you know, the whole Office 365, we're just starting to look at it now. Our SharePoint 2013 is all on-prem. Our compliance office, our technology risk team and security team, they're afraid to death of it. And, you know, at the same time, you know, from an engineering perspective, I think it adds significant value and adds additional security that we don't have today in place. So I'm not afraid of it. And I'm, you know, marching forward trying to figure out what that's going to look like for SunTrust Bank in the future.
We got a yes man. all right, so kind of a long question. What was the most challenging hurdle that you guys faced through the course of your implementation? I know some of these we've kind of already talked about, but ultimately, with regards to the challenges, whether it's the planning phases and kind of getting everybody on the same page, whether it's translating business requirements into IT kind of capabilities and features, user adoption, whatever else, kind of what steps did you ever take to kind of overcome your challenges, or what do you kind of foresee as next steps for you guys as far as anything that you've run into in the past couple years?
So our biggest challenge was we had the requirement that every document that would get uploaded to SharePoint would require it to be classified, and it's with end user accountability of saying, does this data contain anything that's subject to the ear of the ITAR? And show of hands, how do you do that in SharePoint? How do you force every single document that gets uploaded to be classified? Any hands? No? Well, the approach we took was we said, you know what? We can't trust end users to create their own lists and libraries because they're just going to go with the out of the box. There's going to be no mandatory columns for them to complete, and so we don't trust them to do that. So we started going down that path, and that's pretty darn painful, right? Because all SharePoint is lists and libraries. And they didn't talk about it today, but so our solution is a combination of two of their products. One is governance automation, because what that allows us to do is to have the users request lists and libraries that then get created based on templates, and those templates have mandatory columns. And the second part, which was a challenge, was taking action based on the classification. So for example, if you're in a site that should never contain any technical data, it's a marketing or it's an HR site, it's a company picnic site, clearly there should be nothing in there that contains technical data. But by having the list get created based on a template, having that field that available for a user to pick either yes, no, or even I don't know, we rely on their compliance guardian tool to take action on that. So if someone goes ahead and uploads that document and says, you know what, shoot, I don't really know if that contains technical data or not, I'm not the subject matter expert, they click the I don't know button and their tool comes in and it takes that file out of that document library and puts it into a secure location within the site collection that only named users can have access to, and that person is able to disposition that document and put the right classification. So it was tough requirements. It was a lot of learning in the early stages, especially taking away that managed list capability. People got pretty upset with IT. Having to put a ticket in to get a document library was painful, but luckily we were able to automate the implementation, and that was fun.
For me, going back to what I mentioned earlier regarding implementation of 17A4, and the difficulty was twofold. One was technically how we were going to do this, and two, which really was the bigger one, which was working with legal and compliance, not only to understand what the regulation was, but to understand their implementation, and then to work with them to come out with a technical solution that they would be happy with, or that would satisfy the requirement and lower our risk. Because by default, legal and compliance want you to track every single byte of data that goes in and out of the platform, and that's just not feasible. From a data storage perspective, retention perspective, it's just not feasible, and it's very costly. So balancing what they would have liked to get, trying to convince them, do you really need this to comply with this regulation, yes or no, it took us like almost 6 months to come up with the final requirement, going back and forth between all of the different groups that it input into the process to come up with the final agreed to, signed off business requirement for implementation. And then, of course, we had the technical difficulties with the integration of SharePoint and the autonomy tool, and then the modifications and changes we required from the AvPoint side in order to put it in place. But I think what we ended up with was a good compromise to the solution and protects us for that regulation.
Thank you. So there's all kinds of challenges as we start to roll this out. Lots of opportunities, as I like to refer to them as. It's trying to do, I think, in my opinion, too much too quickly. Have a well-defined roadmap and don't try to boil the ocean, and focus on what your organization does well today on your SharePoint platform, and start with that. From there, get into some of those additional capabilities that I think take a little more thought. May take some partner tools to help that platform perform at the where Jared has taken it to. But at the same time, SharePoint's just a phenomenal platform. It can do a lot. And at the same time, You just got to have control and make sure that that roadmap is well defined and do it in an organized fashion.
Awesome. Great, thank you. And a final question from us, and then we'll open up to y'all in case you have any questions, want to pick their brains, if you have any similar situations you want to kind of get guidance on. My last question is, what's one piece of advice that you'd like to give the audience today?
Run. No, I mean, I think, you know, being able to communicate kind of where you are in the process, right? Being able to have open and honest communication with your senior vice presidents and getting them in there to help you where it's appropriate. I mean, it's really tough to go ask for help. You know, people, you tend to want to solve the problem yourself. What we found is in areas where we just couldn't make any progress, you know, being able to kind of document the steps that you took, what your current, you know, blockers are and, you know, kind of what you think is the right, you know, next move, you know, kind of leaning on the, you know, letting those senior vice presidents, let them lead, right? Let them help you out. Let them work for you for a change, right? That's the biggest piece of advice I can give you, because we ran into them mostly it's political challenges. It's not technical challenges. You can usually solve the technical challenges yourself, but when you start hitting the politics and how do you socialize something, it's good to lean on those vice presidents.
I will agree with Jared on this 100%. I think the biggest hurdle to get over is building appropriate relationships with the legal and compliance teams. When we first started this, the legal counsel that was assigned to us would not bend at all. And working with this individual was horrible. It made everybody's life miserable, because what this person wanted would have cost the company millions of dollars to implement. And we were fortunate in that she decided to leave, and the person that replaced her is actually more familiar with what it is that we were trying to do. And more understanding, and actually works very closely with us to define technical requirements and business requirements that actually make sense. You don't need to eliminate the risk 100%. You need to get it to a point low enough where the chance of that risk occurring is so small that, you know, you're willing to take the balance. And we do that with every risk. How low do we need to get it to the point where the company is comfortable with that risk level? Getting it down to zero sometimes it's not realistic. So building that relationship, a good working relationship with legal, with compliance, with the individual businesses that define their guidelines for their business units is critical, because you need that buy-in. And sometimes, obviously, it's required to escalate to either an SVP or even higher in order to get them to apply appropriate pressure to say you're not being realistic, or to say, you know what, at this level, we're willing to sign off on this risk, so this is okay, and let them deal with the consequences one way or the other of that decision, and then actually implementing the technology. The technology, in most cases, is the easy part. It's defining what you need to do in order to comply with the whatever regulation you're trying to incorporate is really the tricky part.
I'd like to echo the same thing that these two gentlemen just shared with you. It's top-down senior leadership support of this direction for your companies. Before you even start to even think about what your design for your farm is going to be, or your structure of your hierarchy of your SharePoint offerings, whether it's O365 or it's on-prem or it's hybrid, get all of these partners to the table, because they are your partners. We're talking about, again, the legal team, the regulatory compliance team, production support needs to be at the table, enterprise architecture, the business solutions team, that development team, and then what I like to refer to as the SharePoint champions, or the folks out in the business that are really going to make your platform very successful. Is get them to the table early before you start to build it up in either your non-prod or production environment. All of that work has to be done up front. Otherwise, you're going to set yourself up for some issues and have to make some changes in your design.
Great. Awesome. Thank you, guys. So at this time, I know there are a couple microphones out in the audience. So if any of y'all have questions that you'd like to ask one of our panelists specifically, Paul, Steven, or Jared, feel free to hop on the mics right now. Or if you have a question for Dana or myself, we'll be here. Definitely before you guys leave today, come up here to the front and grab your extra Ducati raffle ticket that you get for attending today's session. And then be sure and go drop it off at the booth later. So come grab this. I'll leave them up here on the stage. But again, feel free to hop on those microphones if you have any questions for any of us up here. Yep. Yep.
So two-part question. Due to some misguided advice when SharePoint 2010 was put in, call it 5 years ago, we actually have 7 SharePoint farms, and they're all fairly sizable. And that misguided advice was to turn on all of the auditing everywhere, the built-in auditing within SharePoint.
Steve, be nice, guys. Be nice.
So the painful side of that is we have quite literally billions, with a B, of audit records within our databases. And it's now, I mean, it's obviously affecting performance, storage, which was brought up a bit ago. So first part question, I'm hoping that AvPoint's tool will help alleviate that by not deleting the data, but offloading it. Let's get it out of the SharePoint databases into its own. My understanding is that is the case. But part two, then, is our legal department has said that we're a large organization, and so litigation is always happening. As a result, all that data has to be retained in place. So we have this large set of data that we don't really even want, but we can't do anything with it because of the ongoing litigation that is ever present. So part two of the question is, any advice for making changes to policies, technical policies, in flight while the system's up and running?
So the first part with AvPoint's capabilities around auditing specifically, so what AvPoint does is we'll oftentimes take advantage of SharePoint audit data, but actually store that in kind of separate databases or our own databases, which we can then manipulate over time. So we've worked with organizations that are in the billions of audit records and need to actually be able to search and manipulate that and understand what's going on there. So yeah, absolutely for the first part. As far as technical guidance, kind of changing policies in flight, to basically alleviate your specific concern around in-place records management, around content that's subject to litigation requests. Do you guys want to speak to that?
Well, I'm certainly going to say you should definitely follow the advice of your lawyer, right? So, I mean, if your lawyer is telling you that because of litigation you have particular policies that, you know, apply, yep. I think you need to default always, particularly with litigation, on the safe side, right? But I think it's always good to have a conversation. One of the things that I see, and I'm sure you guys have had this experience as well, when you're talking with your lawyers, is that lawyers and IT people do not always speak the same language, right? I actually like to think of it like you need a universal translator, if any of you guys are Star Trek fans, right? Where you understand and they understand and make sure that you're actually talking about the same thing, right? And that's usually a hurdle that's pretty easy to overcome if you can get in the same room with them and sit down with them and say, so what is it exactly that you mean, right? What is it that we need to do? What do we need to hold? And when you say we need to hold everything exactly in place, does it literally have to be physically where it is, or do you just mean that we can't change it? Because those are two very different things that lawyers may not necessarily discern the differences.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that.
Regarding the audit data, personally, we only turn it on where it's required, so we don't have a requirement for tracking that much data. But regarding the in-place, what we did, we come to a compromise with the e-discovery solution, is that, which was the addition, is when there is a legal litigation and it goes out to the system, it actually will, when it finds the content, it not only grabs the current, but every version of the document, pulls all of the history for that document, we'll bring it over to a retention place so that it can it's held someplace else, and then it locks down that copy. So you can't touch it until the legal hold is released. So we actually do two copies, e-discovery, which is where the litigation and the legal teams will work with it. And then once they release it on the e-discovery side, we'll then unlock it on both places so that the content can be used again.
Anybody else have any other questions? Now we've got a few minutes left technically until we're going to be kicked out, and then I know you'll have a break. Don't want to stand between you and your next dose of caffeine by any means, or sugar. Thank you guys again for attending today. Please help us thank our panel for joining us today as well. Last thing that I will remind you guys of, again, come get your extra Ducati raffle ticket. We're at booth 2214 if you want to understand more about AffPoint Solutions and how we've helped these guys or other organizations overcome some of the challenges around cloud, mobile technologies, compliance, governance concerns, all that. We definitely encourage you to come see us. Dana and I both have business cards up here as well, so feel free to come say hi during the break. And then these guys are going to run and hide now. seriously, thank you guys for attending, and we hope it was as valuable for you as it has been for us kind of working with our customers over the year, and we hope this was helpful. So we definitely look forward to your feedback, and slides should be on my SPC as well for y'all. Thank you.